This week's episode of Random Trek is brought to you by the rise and fall of Dodo. A linguist, a military spy, a quantum physicist, and witches all must travel in time to bring back magic. Take the trip too. Read The Rise and Fall of Dodo by master storyteller Nicole Gulland and the best-selling author of Cryptonomicon, Neil Stephenson. Check out The Rise and Fall of Dodo now at neilstephenson.com. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is a returning guest, Gene McDonald. Gene, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me again. I feel very honored to be a returning guest on this podcast.
Well, you notice I don't ask everyone back, so... No, I'm just kidding. I love all of my guests equally, and I appreciate people who are willing to spend 45 minutes or so nattering with me about Star Trek. So thank you for your time. So you've been on before, but tell the people who perhaps are unfamiliar with you a little bit about yourself.
Yes, for you people who don't listen to every episode of Random Trek, or I don't know who you are because I know I do. I'm Jean McDonald, and I am perhaps best known right now for being the founder of App Camp for Girls, which is a nonprofit that teaches middle school girls how to make iPhone apps in the hopes of getting them more excited about going into technology careers, with our end goal being at least, you know, equal representation in the technology industry of the genders. And so I've been doing that for about 5 years. But recently I have retired from operational responsibilities at App Camp and turned that over to our new paid staff, which is awesome and exciting, so that I could move on and get back to the work that I love to do, which is working with independent developers and building communities. And recently became the community manager of Micro.blog, the short form content platform and publishing platform and social media hybrid that was launched by Manton Reese this spring.
Yes, on Kickstarter, he kickstarted it, right? And then he launched this thing as kind of an alternative slash, I don't want to say replacement, but he Manton is a big believer in open standards, right? And he doesn't want, he feels like, I don't want to speak for him, but I feel like the spirit behind it is, you know, he's worried that people are locking their data in with, you know, Twitter and Facebook, and he wants to return the power to the people, but still have the way to network and interact with your friends, but have more control over what's happening with your data.
Yes, I think that, you know, in a nutshell, is like the basis of what he has been working on for a long time. I mean, if you know Manton, you know he's a long time first Twitter third-party developer, then Twitter non-fan, shall we say, and left Twitter. But it's not all about Twitter. And as I use the platform, so we released it, to the Kickstarter backers in April. And so I've been using it, you know, regularly since then. I started to realize how much more I could do with micro.blog instead of just thinking of it as like, well, I'll post here and it'll also go on Twitter. Mm-hmm. it's exciting. It's fun to do something new and to be like in on the ground floor of something as it evolves. And I have to say the community's been super cool. And there are a lot of Star Trek fans over there too.
Oh, so there you go. I will admit I did not back it on Kickstarter because I'm a bad man, but I need to check it out. And I will.
Yes. That sounds good.
But we're here to talk about Star Trek mainly. You have been on before, so we know that you are a well-known Voyager fan. It's your favorite series of Star Trek for many reasons. And I am slowly becoming around to Voyager as a overall series. I've always liked Captain Janeway. So yeah, I was always on board with that. But I had my doubts about the other crew members. And I think what's happening, and now this is going to annoy some people, but what's happening is I have to watch Enterprise episodes. And so watching Enterprise, which I still like, I have to give this caveat, I still like it, people. It's just not the best Star Trek, is making me appreciate how good the characters in Voyager are. But we did not get an Enterprise episode, nor did we even get a Voyager episode. In fact, we got what may be one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, period. It's certainly in my top 10, I think. And I think when we did the incomparable draft of Star Trek episodes, I picked this episode, I'm pretty sure, as one of my first choices. Deep Space Nine's Trials and Tribulations, which is just kind of a love letter to Star Trek fans, really. This is total fan service, and I love it. I loved every second of it. Spoiler alert, I think you should watch it. If you have not seen this episode and you are listening to this episode of Random Trek, you should reassess your life choices. Pause this podcast, watch the episode, and then come back and listen to it, because we're not going anywhere. Now, Gene, do you share my love of this episode before we go into what happens in the details?
I love this episode. I think if we had been on the actual like audio, like telephone call or Skype, when you told me which episode it was, your eardrums would have been blown out, because I was like, oh my God, I got the best episode. That I never, you know, I never expected. I didn't. Yeah. I just assumed I'd get some random thing from this, you know, 3-7 years of Dominion War arc. Because, which I'm willing to discuss, I'm not saying I wouldn't, but it'll be something I'll have to work for. I'll have to understand how that all goes together, but not this one. I've seen it. I've seen it more than once. I've seen the episode that spawned it, shall we say, many times. And today I even watched the animated series, More Trouble. It's like More Trouble with Tribbles, More Trouble, More Tribbles, which is only okay.
Well, I would say. That is kind of the problem with the animated series, that it's only okay. So this is, for people who don't know, this is a Deep Space Nine episode, obviously. But our pals from Deep Space Nine, for reasons that really don't matter all that much, travel back in time. And they end up in the original series episode, The Trouble with Tribbles. And I guess at this point, they wrote this episode because I think it was maybe the 30th anniversary of the original series, and they wanted to have something, some kind of celebration. And someone came up. They had a bunch of ideas about how they could go back and do things, and someone came up with this idea, and it is a fantastic idea.
It is a fantastic idea, and one thing that I did not know until, you know, reading up a little bit for this episode, I didn't realize that apparently a memo went out that everybody had to do a 30th anniversary special, because Voyager has an episode, you know, which has some original series characters in it. I can't remember the title off the top of my head, but with Sulu's in it. And it's a really good episode. And it came out, that was their contribution to the 30th anniversary, you know, homage. So I thought that was interesting. And that episode is very good, but this one is just, on every level, it was a way harder episode to create and to do this, like, meshing two episodes of old Star Trek and new Star Trek together is genius. And hats off to everybody who had to work on this, because sure it wasn't easy.
Yeah, I don't know how they did it, but they did it. And so in that episode of Voyager, which is a fantastic episode of Voyager, is called Flashback Season 3, Episode 2. Okay. It is Tuvok has some flashbacks to his time spent serving under Captain Sulu of the USS Excelsior. So
thank you.
You can check that out. So I didn't mention what this episode we watched, Trials and Tribulations, Deep Space Nine, Season 5, Episode 6, for people keeping track at home. And this has so many delightful moments in it. The story, Ajitin and I were talking before we started recording, the story itself is not all that involved. This is not one of those big idea Star Trek episodes. This is more of let's go back and visit probably one of the most iconic episodes of the original series and have a little bit of fun. And because I think you were telling me about, you were talking to one of your neighbors who is not a Star Trek fan, but they knew what Tribbles were.
I mean, I mentioned it, you know, and yeah, she was like, oh, Tribbles, you know, like, and I think, you know, that's true in general. It's, I mean, I don't know exactly how it became so well known, except that the original is a very accessible piece of Star Trek. You know, it's something mm-hmm. somebody could watch without having watched any Star Trek and totally get it. As I would argue about this one too, you know, if you're trying to get your friends to like want to watch Deep Space Nine, this would be one to say, hey, you can see how cool the main characters are because they go back and interact with the original crew.
Yeah, so this is a good episode to watch. It's a standalone Deep Space Nine episode. It's a late season standalone Deep Space Nine episode, which is a rare thing. But it also, it is not really indicative of Deep Space Nine in general.
No.
but the characters are still the same. So you still get the sense of the characters, but it's not, this is not what you're going to find. This is more along the lines of hijinks than, we see in a lot of Deep Space Nine episodes, unless they are Ferengi focused Deep Space Nine episodes, and then
or holodeck.
Yes, if there's a Vic from the holodeck, then yeah, hijinks will ensue. But yeah, this episode is so great, and it looks so good. Mm-hmm. They haven't remastered it like they have the original series, but it still looks so good. And the way they put the modern characters in with the old footage is, I remember when I watched it for the first time on TV broadcast, and I was amazed at how they did it. And I've watched it, you know, umpteen times, and every time I watch it, I'm still amazed at how good a job they did at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. And I kudos to the people who make the costumes and the sets and things, because yeah. They are spot on. So I'm in awe of this episode. And it's just because it obviously, like you said, Gene, it is a good episode for people who maybe are kind of vaguely interested in Star Trek, because you don't need to know all the background. There are Tribbles. They're cute. They don't like Klingons. That's really all you need to know. and that same thing goes for the original The Trouble with Tribbles. It's just so much fun.
Trouble with Tribbles hasn't come up on Random Trek. Yes.
It has yet, not.
Right?
No.
Interesting.
I don't think.
Because we're spoiling it now, but whatever.
Yes. Spoiler alert for a 50-year-old television show and a 20-year-old television show that we were watching.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to know how The Trouble with Tribbles ends, don't watch this episode. And you don't really need to even watch it if you don't like the original series, because I know a lot of people, it's kind of slow, and people, it has some sexism problems, which are kind of not addressed, but winked at in this episode.
There's some winks.
Yes. I understand you don't have to watch it, but you can still enjoy this episode without having seen The Trouble with Tribbles.
No, that's true.
And this is one of those things where it's playing, it's knowingly playing with one big Star Trek trope, which is time travel.
That's true. And that's like a whole level of comedy that's like layered on top of Trouble with Tribbles. And this like, and because the whole episode is a flashback itself.
Yes.
So it's a double flashback, because it's really, the episode is framed by Sisko talking to the temporal police or temporal investigations.
Yes.
About the, why did they go back to 23, whatever, or 22, whatever.
Yeah, they went back, 105 years or something like that. Yeah. And the temporal people from Temporal Investigations are not jovial fellows. and someone pointed out, probably Memory Alpha, but I was talking about this episode with somebody else, and they also pointed this out, that the agents' names, Luxley and Dolmar, are mix-up versions of Scully and Mulder of X-Files fame. So for you X-Files fans, a little shout-out there. And they basically, their job is, they have to show up and ask, you know, say, hey, Sisko, tell us all the details about what you did and why you did it. Why did you travel back in time? And I just think it is hilarious that Starfleet has an entire section of their organization that is just devoted to temporal investigations. Because, yes, as we know, in Star Trek, it is super easy to time travel.
And right. Yeah, I mean, they even have a temporal prime directive and mm-hmm. everything. I mean, they've thought about it. But I thought, I mean, just the little throw off jokes in the beginning. And as you say, the investigators are there totally seriously. But the having these characters there is also just a joke in itself, because I mean, it's like having, I would say, more than Mulder and Scully, it's like having like the Dragnet guys there, you know, like, we are here, you guys, we've heard every dumb reason why you ended up in, you know, some other time or what happened. Plus we've heard every dumb time joke and pun. So, you know, so they'll say like, oh, you guys must, you know, well, you know, we don't have a lot of time. And you know, is that a joke? No. Good, because we hate those.
That's right. And when Kira or Dax says, when they come up, she's like, oh, you're from Temporal Investigations. I guess you are always on time. They do not find that joke funny. And I can only imagine that they hear that joke hundreds of times every time they show up. Right. The other layer of having an organization devoted to temporal investigations is they really can't do anything. If Sisko had gone back in time and something they did change the timeline, they wouldn't know.
No.
And that's Sisko brings that up. And so really, they are like the ultimate bureaucrats, because they are investigating something that is super important and super impactful, but they cannot do anything about it other than write a report.
No, that's true. That's funny.
But they do, you know, Sisko's like, well, what if, you know, if we change, they said, did you change anything in the timeline? And Sisko says, well, no, we tried very hard not to. And if we did, we would be the first people to notice when we came back. And they turn to each other and say, why do they always say that?
Right. It's like, yeah, we hear that a lot. You're innocent. We know. We all know that.
And I do love when he mentions, like, so when did you travel back? Where did you travel to? And he says, you know, we traveled back to this old deep space station, K7, and we encountered Captain Kirk. And they're like, oh, Kirk. Something like 17 temporal infractions or something like that. Yeah. So, Captain, you know, it did start. I think the episode before this episode of Random Trek was Assignment Earth, in which it starts off the first first minute is Captain Kirk saying, we traveled back in time. Like, no explanation. They just did it. It's routine. They traveled back to 1965 or something.
Yeah.
And in this episode, they travel back in time, but it's an accident.
Right.
Accidental time travel, because they loaded up one of the orbs from Cardassia. They went to go pick it up in the Defiant, as you do when the Cardassians say they have one of Bajoran's most holy relics. they also happen to pick up a human merchant.
One merchant, yes. One orb and one totally unrelated merchant.
That's right.
It's not suspicious at all.
No, everybody's like, okay, come aboard. And this once again shows us the deep level of poor security on Starfleet ships, because this random merchant who, you know, admittedly, spoiler alert, he's not a merchant. He was formerly a Klingon spy, so he may have, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, he may have some training, although it's 100 years out of date, one imagines. So he managed to, like, knock out his guard. Well, he didn't have a guard, because he was just chilling, so he managed to knock out the guard that was guarding the temporal orb, the time orb. He uses it to travel back in time. How he knew how to do that, who knows. The problem, though, is that he then goes to the transporter, transports himself, and that's not the problem, but then he wipes the logs of the transporter. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Don't you need a password or something, people? I mean, don't you lock the transporter itself? It seems like something you'd want to lock, and just not have random people transporting hither and yon. I don't understand.
There would be so few episodes of Star Trek if this transporter was actually required, you know, like a high-level password, you know, to be punched in by a somebody, authorized to use the transporter. So
it would solve a lot of problems that lead to many interesting Star Trek episodes. So I guess I should be glad that they don't have better security on the ships there. And this is where we find out that this is not what he seems, a human merchant, but rather a Klingon who was medically or surgically altered to look like a human so that he could infiltrate this very starbase, K7, 100 years ago. So he could, I forget what his mission was, like mess up the grain delivery or something. It was.
I mean, the original episode is there's a planet, and it's like, 50-50, like, will the Klingons get it or will the Federation get it? Like, and whoever gets, whoever actually, gets a colony going, will get rights to the whole planet, something like that. So in the original episode, that's the thing, is they're bringing grain to that planet.
Oh, that's right. And his mission, which is Arnie Davrin, I guess. Which is not a great Klingon name now.
Well, he was a spy, though.
That's true.
He was a Klingon spy from before. I mean, he was already genetically altered, according to the first appearance in the original series. You didn't know he was a Klingon.
That's right. And I guess this is the point at which we should point out to people who are unfamiliar with the original series that Klingons look different in the original series. Klingons, matter of fact, look different in every series, really. Mm-hmm. But they look radically different in the original series in that they were basically swarthy men. I don't think we ever see any Klingon women in the original series that have dark hair and usually goatees.
Yeah, they have facial hair.
Yeah.
When they say like Arnie was genetically altered to not look Klingon, I thought, so what, they shaved him? Like, because what else can you do, from the original series Klingons, that's all they did, wash the grease paint off, I suppose.
Right, exactly, because
they made them swarthy.
Yes, they're swarthy. That's not my nice way of saying they made them dark complexion, dark skin. And so that's how you tell you're a Klingon, I guess. You have dark skin, facial hair, and probably wearing a sash.
Yeah. Very weird uniforms, obviously. Yes. They're not Starfleet. Yeah.
That's right. So if you don't know, that's and this is also a point in this episode, because I thought, so there are many clever things about this episode. The technical achievement is clever. The framing is clever. But there's also this kind of level of almost everyone who's watching this episode of Star Trek is familiar with the original series, which takes place 100 years before Deep Space Nine. But all the characters in Deep Space Nine are not familiar with their own history, as you would expect now, right? Like, a lot of people wouldn't know what was going on in 1916, and they may meet, if you were to travel back to 1916, the normal person probably wouldn't know who the most famous Navy captains and generals were, and wouldn't be able to identify them. And so, particularly, Dr. Bashir utters the line, "I'm a doctor, not a historian," which is, of course, in itself a joke, for an original series joke. I thought it was very clever to point that out, that, like, we know these characters, and a lot of the characters on Deep Space Nine know them because Dax, of course, was alive then. Captain Sisko is a big fan of Captain Kirk, obviously, and so he knows Kirk and Spock. And vaguely, Dr. McCoy, I thought it was interesting. He was like, oh, yeah, that must be the chief medical guy, McCoy. Oh, yeah.
But then Dax knows McCoy.
Knows him very well.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't come up with a really nice politically correct, comment about Dax in this episode, but it's like, basically sleeping her way across the centuries, her or his way, because Dax is, is a Trill, and has the Trill can, be in a host that's any gender, and they live forever. And so that itself brings in so many interesting things. She's really interested in going to see those Klingons, who she knew when she was a Klingon, Curzon Dax. Yet, I think she would have been surprised to see them without, what they looked like back 100 years ago.
But then she saw them 100 years, so she would not, I suppose.
That's true. She wouldn't. Right, right.
Koloth.
It's so confusing. Koloth, yeah.
And Koloth, I believe, is actually the actor who plays Koloth. Yes, then plays himself in an episode of Deep Space Nine later, which is great. Yeah,
there's a lot of Klingon, like, you know, recycling in Deep Space Nine, which I like, you know, because, of course, that, you know, those old Klingons were enemies of the Federation, and mm-hmm. they were the scariest people, you know, maybe aside from the Romulans, like in the original series, and to have them back where, you know, the Federation and others are cooperating with the Klingons is pretty interesting.
Yeah, now they're best buddies.
They're pals.
They are. And so this episode has a lot of Klingons. So, like I said, there are many. I'm just going to skip around to my favorite moments in this episode. Because,
yes, that's fine, because the plot is really beside the point.
Yeah, they have to find a bomb that looks like a triple, and they do. Spoiler alert. But one of my favorite moments is they are in O'Brien, Bashir, Odo and Worf are sitting in the bar on K7, drinking whatever it is one drinks. I think Odo is drinking some tea. In walks Scotty and Chekov and some guy who's wearing a gold command shirt that I have no idea who he is. And O'Brien's like, oh, there he is. And everyone's like, who? And he's like, it's Captain Kirk. And of course, we know that is not Captain Kirk. Right. And everyone's like, oh, man, are you sure it's Captain Kirk? And he's like, yes, totally, that's Captain Kirk. And it turns out, of course, that it's not. It's just a fun moment. And then, you know, they order Rectigino, and the waitress, who is wearing a very skimpy outfit, which would be probably what she'd be wearing in the original series, says, you're the third. If I get one more person to order Rectigino, I'm quitting. And everybody's like, well, who else ordered Rectigino? Because a plot point was that the undercover Klingon had ordered Rectigino, and then Odo ordered Rectigino. And she was like, the Klingons are ordering Rectigino. And everyone says, well, there are Klingons? Where are the Klingons?
They're like, right there.
They're the swarthy gentlemen at that table and that table. And they're like, those are Klingons? And this is when Michael Dorn, I don't know if he gets enough credit for playing Worf, because the writers, I think, knew how good of an actor he is, and how and Worf, the character itself, is very kind of stoic. He takes himself very seriously. And so that, as a writer, gives you the opportunity to make fun of that character, because, you know, it just amplifies the humor, because he will not take it very well. And so you can just see on his face that he doesn't want to explain this. But now everyone turns to him and is like, those are Klingons? What happened to them? And he says, which is my favorite explanation of this ever, although Enterprise gives a quote-unquote real explanation. He basically says, we do not speak of it with outsiders. Which is perfect.
Yeah. No, that was a great moment. And, you know, it's interesting within this episode who ended up, you know, going to. So from the Defiant, that some of the crew went to the Enterprise and some went to K7, like to find, you know, the bomb or the, you know, Darvin. But like originally I thought, well, they couldn't bring Major Kira because she's a Bajoran and maybe they don't know about Bajorans yet. Like, I would have liked to see a Cardassian in this episode, but that would have been. That would be like ahistorical probably for that period. I don't know. But then they bring Worf, who looks, I mean, he's not supposed to be a Klingon. I suppose people don't take him as a Klingon, because to them, Klingons are just guys with face paint and facial hair. But,
that's right.
And they bring Odo, who is the weirdest looking person of all. And it doesn't really raise any, because I don't know. I just was thinking, like, how they decided to pick these particular crew members to be a part of this episode. Obviously Sisko, obviously Dax, you know, Bashir was really funny. But like, what if Garak had been with them on the Defiant? Like, that would have been funny if Garak had been there.
That's
like,
true. Funnier,
I think. I don't know.
Anyway. Yes, I did have that same thought. Like, why Odo is a shapeshifter? Why doesn't he just make himself look more human or like a Klingon? Although in this, he wouldn't have known what a Klingon would look like, but you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think the answer is, of course, budget. And they didn't want another actor who isn't Odo to play Odo for the whole episode. I do love the fact that this is another Star Trek trope that this episode uses, which is if you're an alien, all you need to do to disguise yourself is to get a funny hat. Yeah. And that is Worf's disguise. He's wearing a giant hat. And Spock has done that hundreds of times.
Many times, yeah.
So that was great.
I like to think Worf's was like, if you think about it, had a little bit of like the Slavic, tradition of his foster parents. Like it looked like he could be wearing that outfit on Red Square.
Yes, so there might be an homage to his Russian upbringing. And I did love, I mean, the costumes are great. The uniforms look great, but I did love Odo's costume particularly because it reminded me of something that we would have seen in the original series of some merchant wearing like a weird baggy balloony vest for some reason. I don't understand it, but it did look right. So good job on that. And so that's what, half of them go to K7 to look for the bomb, and Dax, Sisko, Bashir and O'Brien for a little bit go to the Enterprise to look for the bomb. And so then we get to see these great Enterprise sets that they have of the corridors and the bridge. They must have built the bridge again. And so they all look fantastic.
And just like the sort of, general set dressing of like the corridors or like little... But like that red meshy like divider stuff.
Yes.
I'm like, oh yeah. They were like, oh, we could make that. Maybe we can just go to IKEA and pick that up. I don't know, but it was super. It worked. They really figured it out. That part, it doesn't make you go like, oh, that doesn't look like the old Enterprise.
Right. It doesn't stick out. Really. And even the lighting, is great because it's like the bright 60s light. Like Deep Space Nine is notable for many things, but it's dark. One of the, right. Yeah. It's a very dark show, literally. Yeah. And this episode is not. Especially when they're on the Enterprise. The other thing that I thought was a little weird, I've watched a bunch of original series episodes, of course. I've seen them all. And the Enterprise, the corridors generally are not bustling with activity on the 1960s Star Trek episode. But this episode, they beam over, and I think they just must have had a lot of fun finding all these original series uniforms or making them, because everybody is just like, there are... lots of extras just walking all over the place.
Right. I found that jarring too, because I think it's Dax or Sisko says, well, they really packed them in on these old starships. And I thought, I don't remember packing them in. I remember every shot of a corridor has two people in it, one walking toward the camera and one walking away.
Yes. Or sometimes someone like spinning a wheel on a wall for some reason.
So yeah, that didn't jibe. Although one of the little trivia bits I read was that they had initially designed those corridor, for this Trouble and Tribulations. All right, I already forgot the title of the episode we're talking about.
Trials and Tribulations.
Thank you. That they had designed them to be narrower, and somebody that from the old series or somebody who really knew said, oh no, don't look at those diagrams, those corridors were wider, and that saved them from making a real mistake.
Oh, an unforgivable mistake.
Yeah. But still, they felt like they needed, there were probably just a lot of people wanted to be in that episode.
I think
wanted to wear those uniforms, and I don't blame them, because if I had the opportunity, I would want to do that too.
I would as well. I love it. And then that gives us, so they're in, Sisko and Dax are traipsing around the ship, and O'Brien and Bashir are doing it. And then there's a great moment when Bashir and O'Brien are in a turbo lift and they want to go to deck 7 or something. And so obviously O'Brien says deck 7 and the turbo lift doesn't do anything. He says it again, it doesn't do anything. And Bashir is like, well, maybe it's broken or something. but they just don't know. They have to grab the little holder. But luckily, a lady comes in and shows them how to use the turbo lift, unbeknownst to them. So that's a great moment. And there's another moment where O'Brien is pretending to work on a panel in the hall. and Bashir is scanning for, I think, Arvin at this point. Mm-hmm. He's like, Chief, you're supposed to be pretending to fix something. And O'Brien's like, I don't want to touch any of this. It's all crosswired. I don't want to, if I touch anything, if I blow anything up. And then someone, a crew member, comes up and he's like, Scotty told me to do this. which is a great moment. And then O'Brien's like, oh yeah, well, Scotty told me to do it too, but we could do it together. And the guy's like, okay, well, where do you want to start? And O'Brien says, well, we have to start by taking this thing out. And then the power goes out and he says, well, actually, he says, we have to start by doing this, by not moving it at all. And he puts it back. So this episode has a lot of delightful moments.
It's true.
This is just a big old love letter to this episode from me, because it is fantastic. And there's another kind of knowing original series moment when Dax and Sisko come across Kirk and Spock talking in the hallway. And Dax says something about he's even more attractive in person. Look at those eyes. And of course, Sisko says, well, Captain Kirk did have quite the reputation as a ladies' man. And Dax says, I was talking about Spock.
Yes.
Which,
I like that.
Yes, and because that's what, you know, when Star Trek first came out, everybody was assuming that Captain Kirk, William Shatner, who is a very good-looking guy, would be the heartthrob of the series. And, of course, the character was. But for whatever reason, I shouldn't say what, I mean, Leonard Nimoy is also an attractive man, but he is unconventionally handsome, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Spock is the one that really touched a nerve with many people, and he became probably, I would say, arguably, the most popular character of the original series is Spock.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, I don't know how you would like measure or survey for that, but I totally agree with that. I think people, well, you know, when Leonard Nimoy died and we talked about that, you know, in your special episode, and there was so much about it that I thought, you know, when William Shatner dies, people are going to be, you know, oh, William Shatner. But people don't relate to him, and people really related to Spock, or at least like understood like his like feeling of being an outsider. And all the, you know, his family story is way more compelling. So
yes, Captain Kirk. I mean, Captain Kirk's a fun character. Don't get me wrong, but he is not a very complicated character.
he's not.
Spock has some meat to him. So what do you have a couple of favorite moments? I feel like I've been just talking and talking about this episode because I love it so much.
I love it too. Like I said, like, yeah, I like when Dax says that. I like, I mean, I like many of the Dax, when Dax comes out in the original series costume, that's pretty awesome, because, you know, they were talking about, oh, the costumes aren't the way they were back then, because that's an interesting fan plot point, which is in the original series, the engineers wore red, and the, you know, and operations wore red. And in the later series, it was the executive branch,
right?
The commanders, wore red, and the engineers wore gold. I'm not sure why they decided to change that, actually.
Who knows?
Because whatever. But, you know, the guys are all sitting there talking about how, yeah, they made these changes, don't you know? And what about the women? And Dax comes out in her super cool little Star Trek mini dress and boots, and says, like, the women wore less.
It is true, much less than they do in later seasons or episodes, yeah. I should say.
So I think that's a classic moment, you know, of like, just, you know, let's not forget this was very different back then. I mean, she would have never been the science officer of the original Enterprise. And Dax is hard to like to pin down, because they've created a character who's no specific. I mean, she's a female, attractive female in Deep Space Nine, but she has this history of being all sorts of, you know, people, memories of all sorts of people. But I did have like this. So this isn't a favorite thing. This is a kind of like, meh. Do we have to use every opportunity to have Dax be like either sexually attractive or have sexual history with one of these old characters?
Mm-hmm.
Because they do use that a lot.
They do. Yes, and I, well, yeah, I agree with you. I was trying to think, I don't think she had a, that kind of relationship with Koloth.
No.
But no, certainly.
There were pals, right?
With McCoy, apparently. She,
apparently.
had a dalliance, or certainly, was able to, judge the abilities of his hands, shall we say.
And I like that line. Okay. The man has the hands of a surgeon. I said back then, you know, I was like, okay, I like that. That's funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, shoot. I like that. I mean, I like everything about it. I like the bit. So, you know, if we get to the sort of wrap up of, mm-hmm. you know, with the temporal agents and says, so you didn't do anything. You didn't try to. And that's where Sisko says, well, there was this one thing.
Yes, I did.
I did want to meet Kirk. And so they, you know, they did a beautiful job of meshing those. Sisko just coming up and giving Kirk something to sign and then saying, like, it's been an honor serving with you. I'm going, you know, I've been reassigned. And I think every person we know would have done the same thing. temporal prime directive be banned. Although, did you think it was funny to me that Sisko was quite so Kirk like, you know, worshiping, because they're so different, you know, like, and Sisko's certainly not like, I mean, he's always been critical of other people, and he certainly, you know, didn't worship Picard.
Oh no, he hates Picard.
So I thought that was funny how he was a little bit more fanboy than I expected.
Well, I guess that, you know, Captain Kirk, I assume, is someone that he studied in Starfleet Academy. So it's kind of like meeting someone from, well, it certainly is meeting someone from history and someone who he studied and read all about. So he wants to see if the man lives up to the stories. And Captain Kirk, of course, does, because that's what Captain Kirk does. so I thought, and I did like the temporal investigators were like, well, we probably would have done the same thing. So it's okay. And I do love the way this episode ends, because it is, it is a Star Trek fact that Tribbles are extinct. And as mentioned in this episode, the Klingons eradicated them. In a funny kind of conversation with Odo and Worf, but, you know, you travel back in time, Tribbles are going to get come along with you. So it ends with Tribbles across multiplying across the promenade, and Odo asking if Sisko had mentioned it to the temporal investigators, and he said no. And it ends with a shot of Quark sighing with a Tribble on his head and Tribbles all over the bar, which I think is the perfect way to end such a light episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, no, that was pretty funny. And actually, you know, as you say that, I think my favorite phrase was Quark saying, like, the Tribbles' home world. I'm like, the Tribbles have a home world? Like, it's like saying dogs have a home world, right? Like, okay. Or I don't know. I don't know. You know, I've done as much research on Tribbles as I can, and I know, but as I understand them, not as being like, you know, a civilization. It is pretty funny. Yeah. The Tribbles will continue to occur. I really hope they have them on the next Star Trek. They'll have to, like, pretty much every Star Trek has at least had, you know, a Tribble as, you know, set decoration somewhere. Yes, so
you have to find the Tribble. Well, Gene, thank you so much for joining me for this episode.
Thanks for having me. It was just pure joy in every way.